Hey everyone, welcome to the Period Party. I'm Nicole.
Hi everybody, I'm Nat.
And on this episode, we're talking to Molly Hayward about modernizing our periods. Molly is the visionary female founder of Cora, a disruptive consumer brand providing body-conscious organic tampons, an elegant user experience, and sustainable menstrual products to girls in developing countries. Cora represents the smart, chic, and conscious woman of today and is transforming the experience of womanhood on a global scale. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Molly, we obviously weren't laughing at you. We were laughing at ourselves when we started recording.
I know.
Well, we're very happy to have you here, though. Molly, do you want to just talk our listeners through the origin of Cora and that journey?
Yeah, of course. So for me, I was really a typical American woman until a few years ago when I was sort of, I was really in between startups, to be honest. I had started my career in the world of startups and had started my own company at age 23. And as I was getting ready to leave that company and sort of move on to my next big project, I really was kind of at a loss for what I wanted to do. And very sort of fortuitously, a friend of mine reached out to me and said, you know, I have a friend who runs a nonprofit. They do great work in Kenya. They're taking a bunch of volunteers with them on this trip in a week or two. They have one seat left on the plane. Do you want to go? And it was sort of a moment of like, can I really do that? And then it was just a yes. And so I went. And I really had no real idea what was going to come from that trip. But essentially what happened was that I saw all of this investment being made in girls' education, you know, building schools and digging wells and girls sort of, you know, having the opportunity to go to school for the first time and investing so much themselves in making sure they were going to school. And as it turned out, they would all just stay home during the week of their periods because they couldn't afford sanitary pads. And, you know, I just had one of those light bulb moments. And I thought, Tom Shoes, Warby Parker, why not do this with these products that women in my society buy every single month for themselves? Most of us do it relatively unconsciously, or at least we have until recently as sort of this topic has come to the mainstream. But I just thought, why not kind of connect women in my society to a girl on the other side of the world, and, you know, we can help each other. And from there, as I started to explore the feminine care industry, it was sort of like one aha moment after another, mostly because I had just never thought about my period all that deeply. And so what I started to discover about the product and the way I felt managing my period and the way I would manage my period at home or when I was at the office or out to dinner at a restaurant, I started just paying attention to all these things. And the first thing that really struck me was what these products are made of. So as you probably know, and many of your listeners probably know this as well, is that conventional brands, conventional products like tampons and pads are typically made from a mix of synthetic and cotton. Non-organic cotton is one of the dirtiest crops in the world. It's heavily, heavily sprayed with pesticides and often grown with genetic modification and sort of, you know, think about putting that material in this very absorbent part of your body for a week, a month, or 40 years of your life. And I started to sweat. I was like, oh my God, why isn't anybody talking about this? Like, I'm a relatively health conscious person. Like, this is when, you know, organic food is becoming pretty mainstream and safer cleaning products are becoming mainstream, and even the skincare and beauty care industries are starting to pay attention to what materials and chemicals they're using. And like, this product, like, no such innovation. There were certainly organic products that were out in the market already, but they really didn't provide the brand experience or the user experience that that I felt like women really deserved and modern women would relate to. And so that was sort of like the beginning of setting out to create a modern brand for modern women that's beautiful and sophisticated and really focuses on design and user experience. Because at the end of the day, like, your period is an experience. And yes, we use products to help us manage that, but ultimately it's this physical week long or however long each of our individual cycles is, this week long experience that is so personal, so profound, it can be so painful. And I just thought, why sort of add the added layer of having a really shitty product experience on top of something that's already you know, pretty difficult. Our society just doesn't make it that easy to manage our periods. And so I thought, let me look at this from end to end, from product to the way you manage your period at home and at work, and create a brand that would also stand for this larger movement towards girls' education, female empowerment. And so that's what I did. And you know, we started out via subscription only, so through our website, and you could customize your order. You can customize your order, and we deliver a 3-month supply to you every 3 months. And then for every monthly supply we ship to you, we're providing a month's supply of pads to a girl in a developing country, currently India, soon to be other parts of the developing world, including Kenya. And we're helping a girl stay in school through her period, essentially, you know, just created the kind of brand that I would be excited to buy from and have this experience from.
That is fantastic. I just love how you took a trip literally many years ago and turned that into this incredible business that you now call your own.
Yeah, it's been a journey, that's for sure. You know, it's been a labor of love, let's say that.
There you go.
Oh, we totally get that, don't we, Nat?
Yeah.
We totally get that. Yeah.
I'm curious about the fact that you have a male co-founder who I happen to know as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that. How did that come about? And because we're going to talk more about the political landscape and women's health and all of those good things, but I'd love to hear more about the male factor.
Well, to be totally honest, and I can say this because I said it in front of him, when we were first introduced, or our mutual connection said to me, you know, I have this friend who's working on a very similar tampon menstrual health concept to you. Would you like to meet him? I know you're both, or would you like to meet this person? I know you're both working on finding a co-founder. And I was like, great, who is she? And of course, get on to the Skype call, and it's a guy. And I couldn't tell from the name. His name is Morgan, which is obviously could be a woman's name as well. And the first thing that went through my head was, oh, hell no. And, you know, I really have this conception of, like, men who, as my perception really was, like, all of these shitty products have been developed without women. Because how could a woman possibly design, you know, such hideous branding and have such a cheesy sort of message and provide such a shitty user experience? Like, you know, no woman would have designed it this way. And so I was very skeptical at first. But of course, as I had several conversations with him and got to know him, of course, he's a wonderful human being and, actually started working on you know, his concept because he was concerned for his wife. And he saw his wife kind of being this kick-ass woman, like we all are, but she was, like, struggling like we all did to, like, have tampons when she needed them. And, you know, they're falling out of the wrappers at the bottom of her purse, and she's like running out. She's like a, you know, a very high level professional at a very important company. And she's like running to 7-Eleven in the middle of the night while she's on a business trip to buy whatever tampons they had. And he was sort of like, what's going on here? Why? Like, what's the disconnect? This happens every month. Don't you keep track of it? Like,
I feel like this is every woman, though. Like, it's like, oh no, there it is.
And I'm you're washing your underwear out in the sink. Like, yeah, it's totally disappeared. So, of course, you know, my skepticism gave way, and we've had this amazing just partnership and working relationship to build Cora. And I actually think, you know, it's certainly kind of taught me a lesson in reading books by their covers, but also I think specific to this industry and this space, I truly believe that we cannot make meaningful change without having men on board. And while we take all of, you know, the perspectives on our team into consideration anytime we're making a major decision, I have just been so sort of, I have been so heartened to see sort of the genuine desire of the men on our team. Now there's more than one, but the men on our team who feel so passionately about this because they are so passionate about the women in their lives, and they care so deeply about their health, and they see the injustice that has existed, and they feel a responsibility to right that, or to help right that. And so for me, it's just really amazing, and I feel completely privileged to, you know, frankly, to have that perspective, and to be been shown kind of in the most, you know, wonderful way that bringing men into this conversation is essential, and they're willing. You know, not every man. I'm not talking about everyone yet, but many are, and you know, we've seen that in other ways too. We have investors who are male. We have customers who are male, i.e. they bought product for their wives or their girlfriends or their daughters. So it's really been quite interesting to see men kind of becoming woven into the fabric of our brand and this movement and this experience that we provide.
I will add really quickly that my boyfriend is the same. He's just like, you're the most unprepared period girl ever. I mean, I feel like all men sort of feel like that about their ladies, because it's the crisis.
They're like, what's going on right now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I so appreciate what you just said about men, because, I mean, Nat and I have talked about this pretty extensively as well. I mean, we're a bunch of chicks talking about periods all the time, basically.
Right.
There really are no men in the conversation. So shout out to Morgan. Totally appreciate him. And all the other men who are really invested in your company. That's great.
Yeah. And you know what? It ties into like the diversity of people that I saw at the Women's March in Washington. Like I of course don't know what the count of women to men was, but I know that the group I was with was equal parts men and women. And I saw a lot of men out there. And the ones I talked to said, you know, these are human rights. This is my wife. This is my daughter that I'm out here for. This is just the right thing to do. It has nothing to do with the fact that I'm a man or not a woman. Right. It's just the right thing to do. And that to me was just like
super powerful.
Very heartening.
Yeah, awesome. Can we talk a little bit more about the whole, you're saying at the Women's Rights March, because in Australia, it's not as, I don't feel like we actually fully understand it. It's not really, doesn't have a big impact on us here. I feel like that we don't know about a lot of what maybe is being experienced in other areas of the world. And I'd love to talk about it. I know for you guys, your audience may have, have first-hand experience, but for us, we don't really know. So can we talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that hits home for me really is not sort of like, it always gets boiled down to reproductive rights, and it always gets boiled down to abortion. That is like just this extremely divisive sort of issue in our country. Yeah. And, I just hate that, because so much of the policy that is really on the chopping block goes well beyond any abortion service. It's about women's health care. It's about preventative care. It's services. It's health insurance. It's sort of all of these pieces that, and I'm just talking about women's health, and there are a lot of other issues surrounding it. But, I think that to me, it's more troubling when I think about sort of the wholesale lack of regard for women's health to be a priority and for women's healthcare to be a right. I mean, obviously our healthcare system is very different from Australia's. And in many cases, because of the way our healthcare system is set up, places like Planned Parenthood are where women who are uninsured can go for their preventative care and to get birth control and to be counseled on a variety of issues. And I think to really kind of mount an attack on an organization like that based on a single political issue is really short-sighted. And I think that is so much about, or so much the reason why so many women came out, because it's this idea of stripping us of so many things because you are pinpointing this one issue that you have a strong opinion on.
So
I think that there's not this holistic view.
Sorry, it's not illegal in all states, or it is?
It's not. No,
it's not.
I mean, it's federally, it's not illegal. It was made legal in the 70s.
That's what I thought.
Court case. We're regressing is what it feels like. At least it does to me.
There's certain states that are now.
That are now. Or? Right. So there's like, they've chipped away at this ruling pretty aggressively, especially in the last 10 years. What is happening now is that some states are like, we're almost at the point now where it is illegal.
But what benefit does that have other than being a belief
we're satisfying the Christian voting base, essentially, is what we're doing. It's very disturbing. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know, Molly, what your take is on that, but that's, that's how I feel. We're seriously lacking in separating of church and state in the U.S.
Yeah. I think it strikes me as something that seems to hit a lot of people on a really personal level. And, to your point, sometimes it is, or in many cases, it stems from religious belief, and that trickles down through our political system, and so I think that in this country it's harder to understand or harder to sort of swallow the pill that decisions are being made. Especially when the majority of our political leaders are men. And it sort of doesn't feel like a decision that that a man should be able to make for a woman.
It boils down to that. It makes a lot of sense in that respect? Like, how can men be making decisions based on something that's happening in a woman's body? That just seems ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. That's
like,
point.
You know, it's like it'd be really different if it was even women that were saying, you know, for whatever reason that they might believe that that wasn't okay. It doesn't make it okay. I'm not saying that, but it's, you know, it just seems really archaic that you're having to fight for something that, you know, I mean, yeah, it obviously comes down to
something that was
choice,
already resolved.
But it just is,
yeah,
in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it just is, you know, I sincerely hope that, that is settled law. And according to most legal scholars, it is. But I do think that those who support Roe v. Wade and who support the right to end a pregnancy, I think they are being signaled that they need to be vigilant, and that it may not be settled law, or even if it is, that there could be. There could be efforts made to change that. And you know, I think what we're seeing is real political will and desire to do that. And, you know, and I think that, again, like, that was why, that was part of the reason why I think so many people turned out for this march, because really it's sort of unfathomable to think that something that is such settled law in this country could be put on the political table as an issue that that could be, or a decision that could be reversed. And I think that, you know, those who support that right, you know, need to be vigilant, and those who you know want to ensure that is a right that women maintain. It unfortunately, it's just not. We're just not in a situation where if that's how you feel, you can stay home. You know, I think most of us realize that we need to make our presence known, and you know that's, I think, what we did and hopefully what we'll continue to do. But I think it's really about seeing women's value and seeing them as whole human beings who have the capacity and the intelligence to make the best possible decisions for themselves. And that is not a decision that anyone but the individual can or should make.
So, I mean, then how has Cora then used this as something to turn it around? Like, you know, surely your message rings louder than ever now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we are, you know, we are a company that, you know, is all about inhabiting your body more fully and really embodying your womanhood and really experiencing that in a way that, that honors these natural cycles and processes. And we just, I think, are so dedicated to the idea that, and in our eyes, the truth, which is that, that women should, have full, autonomy when it comes to their bodies and full sovereignty when it comes to their bodies. And so, you know, honestly, we don't like to get mired in politics, but at the same time, we realize that, you know, we also don't want to sort of sit idly by while decisions are made that, that we feel harm women. And so, you know, we've been active, and it's not like, again, it's not Democrat, Republican, it's not conservative, liberal, it's just about women. It's just women's bodies. It's human beings. You know, take yourself out of, or, you know, or rather put yourself in the shoes of a woman and understand that, that taking away her right to make decisions about her body is, you know, a constitutional infringement. And that's not the country that we want to live in. And so I think that whatever your politics, you know, that is the, that's the consideration, and that's really what's at stake. So, you know, we are trying to really focus, not, you know, our wheelhouse, so to speak, or our focus is not necessarily on issues of reproductive health, although obviously we are related to that. We are, you know, focusing on actually, you know, the policies that are specific to menstruation, because, you know, we're very well suited to address those. But things like taxation on menstrual products, you know, we eliminated the tax from our own online subscription. So basically, you know, because we're an online service, we would have had to tax women in California who purchased our product. We wouldn't have to tax anyone else in other states, because that's sort of how those laws work. Wherever your company is based, the tax laws apply there, or to customers there. And so we thought, you know, we don't agree with this tax, and yet this group of our customers in California are going to have to pay it when they sign up. Let's just get rid of it ourselves. And so, you know, we don't tax anyone. You can be in California, you can be in New York, our products, no tax. And, you know, we made it very clear that we disagreed with the law. Unfortunately, there was a bill that was introduced in California to eliminate the tax, and the governor didn't sign it. And that was really disappointing, but I think that we've seen that this is becoming sort of a yet another symbol of sort of this new women's movement, where we're beginning to just pick up a lot of the issues that I think many of us had put down, because we thought, well, you know, our moms fought for this 40 years ago, so we don't have to. And that's just not the case anymore. So, you know, we've been active in that regard. We've been active in terms of the effort to mandate long-term research and testing on the health impacts of conventional cotton and synthetics from menstrual products. And again, a law that's been introduced and not passed many times over. And that's really disappointing. But I think that there's now more of a groundswell than ever among women to actually begin to champion these causes and get in front of politicians and really say, you know, we are here. These are the things that matter to us. And don't you dare think that they don't. And don't you dare think that we wouldn't, you know, block your reelection because you don't seem to care about these issues. And I think that's really powerful.
I love that you've turned it into, well, almost made it a superpower.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you two have heard about it, but somebody just mentioned to me about this day that the organizers of the Women's March are trying to put together, where women will essentially just stay home and not participate in the economy and not work for an entire day. And
oh my God, that's amazing.
We can all see what happens.
Impact that has. That's awesome.
So I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I am looking forward to really, you know, making those types of statements, because I think that we've just been undervalued for a really long time.
That's a fact.
Totally. Molly, we're out of time. Where can our listeners find Cora and find you?
You can find Cora online. Our website is cora.life, L-I-F-E.
And it's Cora with a C, not Cora with a K, for our listeners as well.
Cora with a C, C-O-R-A.life.
Yeah.
And you can find us across social media at Cora Women.
Awesome. Thank you, Molly, so much for joining us this week. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. For all of our listeners that are keen to find out more, of course, go to our previous episodes on iTunes. And, of course, please don't forget to rate us, because we love a good old 5-star rating, don't we, Nicole?
Obviously.
Thanks, girls, so much. And I'll say bye for now and chat soon. Bye, guys.